Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Senior figures in unionism and loyalism are warning of the threat of a return to violence if the controversial Irish sea border remains. The Irish and British governments, as well as the European Union, insist the Northern Ireland Protocol must stay. But tensions are rising in loyalist communities, with one activist predicting demonstrations on the streets of Dublin later this year. Well, our reporter Barry Lenehan is in Belfast. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Claire.
So you've been there hearing from grassroots unionists. What have they had to say to you?
Yeah, and I'm standing here talking to you from Belfast Port, where the effects of the invisible Irish sea border, they're becoming increasingly visible. We've had threatening graffiti here in recent weeks, that graffiti prevalent in many loyalist areas as well. Hundreds of posters, anti-protocol posters, while staff here at Belfast and in Larne were withdrawn from work a few weeks ago as well over concerns for their safety. Now, the practical implications of the Northern Ireland Protocol are also being increasingly felt in recent days and weeks as shoppers find some of their shelves empty. And last night, the DUP leader, Arlene Foster, she accused the European Union of being, quote, tone deaf to the concerns of unionists following that meeting with the EU-UK body charged with overseeing workings of the protocol. But what exactly are those concerns and how deep runs the opposition? Here's what people told me in the predominantly unionist seaside town of Bangor.
It is making life difficult, there's no doubt about it, you know, for trade and what have you.
We're stuck. We feel yes. We're stuck again.
We thought we were getting the best of both worlds, but
we're actually getting nothing.
The worst of both, actually.
Yeah. And which way did you vote back
in? I voted to leave.
And I'm the other way, we want it to remain.
Do you regret it now?
No, because I think we'll get this sorted out. We'll get it sorted out.
Is there anger with the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson?
He really let us down with the border down the Irish Sea, which Theresa May tried and kept with it because it was a promise that had been made, and I think he's let us down.
We should have a border poll at the minute and see what way the ordinary people think. There'll be some unionists that will think a united Ireland is the way to go, but we all need to be united in one and have some sort of discussion over whether or not the people want it.
What of the discontent over the sea border?
Talk of violence, you know. I mean, politicians are saying, effectively, if we don't get this, it's like Donald Trump saying, you know, there's going to be war. There could be war. And please God, that never happens again. I mean, we went through 20, 30 years or more of the Troubles. It might be IRA, UVF that will speak, and then we'll see how that goes. Well, we all know how that'll go. It'll end up with blood on the streets, bombing again, and all that sort of thing.
All I know is I ordered a parcel in September. It only came 2 days ago. All this attitude of if you say it or you want it, then we have to have the opposite. What is that about? I mean, we're just trying to destroy our own country.
I think there's a lot of English people, you know, look across here and say, you know, why don't they let them have a united Ireland and get on with it, you know? And I would, you know, I'm a Protestant, come from a place called the Shankill Road, and I would quite happily live in a united Ireland if we all could live together.
People in Bangor there. Now, the last voice there, originally from the Shankill Road, as he said, the predominantly loyalist area of West Belfast, unionist murals and union jack flags ubiquitous. Here's what people there had to say last night.
We don't want a hard border on Ireland, but come the end of the day, it's a democracy, and we voted to leave European Union, and that democracy has to be respected. You don't know what could happen. You honestly do not know what could happen. Nobody wants to return to the old days. The madness of the Troubles, nobody wants that there. But come the end of the day, we're all Democrats. It may well be when the COVID restrictions are eased and people are allowed to mingle again and crowds form again and parades start again. And
talk of unionists being disrespected.
We're absolutely being disrespected. So we are. We're being disrespected by the British government as well.
Do you feel betrayed by Boris Johnson?
If I had to push came to shove, yes.
We have seen threats to journalists, to politicians, threatening graffiti. Is that a very minor minority, do you think, or greater anger?
Sticks and stones break my bones. Names will never hurt me, mate. It's only writing on the wall. Mm. So it is. But it could be a precursor for further down the lane where things may turn nasty.
The constitutional rights in Northern Ireland for so-called British citizens have now been jeopardised. And it's there under the Good Friday Agreement that borders and whatnot cannot be changed without the vast majority of people in Northern Ireland wishing to do so. And I personally think it's played more in the hands of the nationalists. It's another feather in the cap to go down the route that they want to go down.
Senseless, so as affecting the businesses and things like that are. I just think it should go. It's organised badly. So it needs to be looked at and just needs to go. For the sake of businesses.
Absolutely rid of it. It is causing so much pain to the people in Northern Ireland. Tesco's, I mean, there were shelves emptied in Tesco's because of it, you know what I mean? And it's purely down to this stupid farcical sea border. My own personal opinion is I think this is all a precursor to United Ireland. So this sea border, the UK, the British, the English, they're just turning their back on the Northern Irish people.
People on the Shankill Road there clearly unhappy, Barry. But what are the political and community leaders you spoke to saying about all of this?
Well, the DUP under pressure politically as hardline unionists abandoned the party over the protocol, but with the former First Minister David Trimble saying it must be scrapped or else there's risk of a return to violence, community groups in loyalist areas, they're calling for calm, but they're also fearful for the weeks and months ahead. Jim Wilson is a community worker on the Newton Ards Road in East Belfast, a former loyalist prisoner. He says people are angry.
We fought against the Republican movement as loyalists for 30-odd years, not to have this as an outcome, not to have a border in the Irish Sea. And do you think that me as a loyalist who spent time in Loncash and I was interned at 19 years of age, do you think that I was going to vote for weaken the Union? No, it's how the British government, the Irish government specifically, and EU have dealt with the whole problem.
How would you describe the atmosphere in loyalist communities like this at the moment?
I think it's a simmering kettle that's coming to a boil, and how that ends up, that's entirely up to the British government, because the British government and the EU have a way out of this, and that's to scrap the protocol. I would not for 1 minute advocate violence, because we got nothing out of the flag protest. We had the flag protest that went on, and we had 300 to 600 young children in our communities have criminal records now because of it, and we didn't gain an extra day in the city hall for the flag. We don't want this to happen again, but that all lies in the hands of the British government and the EU government.
Some would say it would lie in your hands and leaders' hands.
No, well, let me explain something to you.
To urge calm.
When I was part of the Good Friday Agreement, right, I was part of the loyalist delegation and the Good Friday Agreement. But the Good Friday Agreement didn't just apply to Catholics and Republicans. The Good Friday Agreement was for me and my family and my kids. I know what you have done in Europe and in Britain. You have drove a horse and carriage right through it, so you have. This is not what I signed up for in the Good Friday Agreement, so I no longer support it. It's as simple as that. And there's thousands of unionists and loyalists no longer support the Good Friday Agreement. It's delivered absolutely nothing to our people.
What's going to happen now if the protocol is maintained?
Young loyalists see these things happening. Older statesmen like me and others who have been part of the loyalist movement for a long, long while will get just pushed to the side and told, sorry. And then we'll have no control over people who decide to go out, because we have no control over the flag protest.
It's a fairly striking contribution from Jim Wilson there, Barry, a former loyalist prisoner and community worker. But you know this threat of violence we heard about in your earlier clips? How real are those threats? What are the authorities saying?
Figures obtained by the BBC show how there are an estimated 12,500 members of loyalist paramilitary groups in Northern Ireland. However, the PSNI has said, while discontent is growing in loyalist communities, there are no reasons for significant concern. Now, loyalist activist Jamie Bryson, who has deep insights into the workings of the East Belfast UVF, he says there will be protests in the coming weeks. And given, he says, the loyalist anger at past actions of the Irish government, those protests could be in Dublin.
Well, look, I don't think anybody sensible wants violence or wants to go down that path, but I mean, naturally there's people within the loyalist community who are saying, well, it seems they have worked for nationalism, and if a threat of violence is good enough to oppose a border between Northern Ireland and the Irish Republic, well, why shouldn't the same template just be deployed in order to thwart the Irish Sea border? And I don't condone that line of thinking, I don't encourage it, but I mean, it's a very difficult logical argument to counter that whenever somebody says, well, hang on a minute, look what they did in terms of how nationalism talked up a threat of violence.
Is there not a sense, though, that unionism is using the threat of loyalist violence as a bargaining chip, so to speak?
People can take whatever view they want on that. I live and work in loyalist communities, and I can tell you the anger is palpable on a daily basis, and it's growing, and it's growing amongst people who aren't and would have no time for loyalist paramilitary organisations, who aren't part of loyalist paramilitary organisations.
Once it gets onto the streets, you said before anything can happen. Surely there should be calm urging that this doesn't spill over to the streets.
Well, I mean, the difficulty is that whenever you're arguing for a political solution, and that's what we're arguing for, that's what we're urging the DUP to do, but if that political solution, and people don't listen, and the government, British government ignore you, the Irish government ignore you, and they all put their fingers in their ears, then people are going to become so frustrated, they've nowhere else to go, and they are pushing the unionist and loyalist community into a corner that they don't want to be in. There's nobody in the unionist and loyalist community that wants to be on the streets, absolutely nobody that wants there to be any form of violence whatsoever.
But you see it happening?
I think there's the very clear potential that things could get very, very bad very, very quickly. And I think if there are protests would probably be directed towards Dublin first.
Tell me about that. What's planned there, or what would be planned?
Well, there's nothing planned, but I'm saying if unionism and loyalism were looking to say, well, you know, who do we protest against? Who are the aggressors? Who has used the threat of violence? Who has whipped all this up in order to impose this on the unionist and loyalist community? And it's the Irish government. So I think if there were protests, you know, people may take the view, well, we'll go and protest in Dublin.
There are many listening to that would be appalled or disgusted, really, when you say that, after what happened on the streets of Dublin in 2006.
Well, I mean, I'm appalled and disgusted that the Irish government went to the European Union and waved about newspaper articles. They let this genie out of the bottle. When there's going to be peaceful protest, who do you protest against? Well, who are the aggressors? And the aggressors, for the most part, were Dublin.
Jamie Bryson there, loyalist activist, ending Barry Lenehan's report from Northern Ireland. And we want to talk more about the issues raised in Barry's report. And I'm joined on the line by security correspondent with the Irish News, Alison Morris. Alison, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining us this morning. We heard one of the contributors in Barry's report there talking about threatening graffiti and describing it as just writing on the wall. But last weekend, you were the subject of some of that graffiti on a wall in North Belfast. What do you think when someone says, this is just writing on a wall, means nothing?
Well, look, I mean, I have a very thick skin after doing this kind of job that I do. Being a security journalist in Northern Ireland is not a job for wallflowers, let's face it. And the graffiti on the wall, while it may have very well, I'd be more upset when things like that upset my family than they upset me. It's, I suppose, it's to be expected when you do the kind of security job I do, where you're constantly shining a light on those paramilitaries and criminal gangs and criminal elements. Interestingly, though, the Brexit graffiti, much of that was centred around Leo Varadkar, which, you know, I find very strange, given the fact that that loyalism seemed to have pinpointed as the sort of bogeyman in all this. When you look at what happened around the Brexit debate, and you look at actually the chain of events that have led us to where we are now and led us to the sea border, you had the DUP in a position of power that they could only have dreamt of in Westminster for 2 years during those really vital negotiations. And at that stage, they would have been wise to go for the softest Brexit possible, which would have mitigated any need for any border or checks in the Irish Sea. And instead, they continually voted down those types of Brexit until they got Boris Johnson in power. And that is where we're led to now. But yet, when you've listened to Jamie Bryson speaking, their anger is not directed where it should be directed, at Westminster, because if there is a betrayal of unionism here, that's where the betrayal took place. It took place in the halls of Westminster. It did not take place in Dublin.
And you heard Jamie Bryson there talking about, you know, if a march happens or a protest happens, it's coming to Dublin. Do you think that is a realistic possibility?
I think it would be very unlikely. I mean, to mobilise enough people who would want to travel to Dublin to protest, given what has happened, you know, I can't see that there would be an appetite for that. But I'm not downplaying the unionist anger. There is, of course, unionist anger in relation to what's happened to Brexit. They feel very betrayed. And, I mean, if you could try and get into the mindset of loyalism, they are extremely loyal to, you know, the British government. They have spent their whole life being loyal to a British government who they now see as having betrayed them in relation to the sea border. But, I mean, you cannot fight against your own government and someone you feel loyal to, and therefore that anger, I think, is being misdirected elsewhere. And there's also a sort of rewriting of events as to what happened. You know, the threat of Republican paramilitary violence, while remains real, I mean, as a security journalist, I would know that the numbers of people involved in that kind of violence, they're very small. This is something that could have quite easily being contained from a security point of view. We know that the real pressure in terms of maintaining the Good Friday Agreement and keeping that border frictionless, it came from Irish America. You know, we know that it came from that point where the British government were told that if you mess with the Good Friday Agreement, if you put infrastructure on the island of Ireland, there will be no trade deal. And that was the motivating factor. Money is always the motivating factor in these things.
Yeah, I just found it really interesting, Alison, to hear Jim Wilson there talking about this from his perspective and saying, you know, the Good Friday Agreement was for me too. And he feels betrayed, which is why he can no longer support it. And when somebody is talking from that perspective, it's hard not to understand that sense of betrayal that he has.
And it's been going on for quite some time. So unionism feel the ground slipping from underneath them, and that's been going on for a considerable amount of time. The demographics of this place have changed much quicker, I think, than people anticipated they would. You know, we're coming to the centenary of the partition of our island. The formation of Northern Ireland is 100 years old. It was not, I think, expected to be in so much peril after just 100 years, because that unionist majority was very specifically gerrymandered into the state. But that has slipped away much quicker, I think, than people expected. The changes that came with the Good Friday Agreement, the rise to power of many of the nationalist parties and people from the nationalist community being in positions of influence in all sorts of bodies has shook loyalism anyway. Mm-hmm. And then along comes Brexit. And so you have to remember that there's people who feel their entire identity slipping away from them. And the thing about the Good Friday Agreement is that for nationalism, it was a process. It was a process that was a lengthy process. They were playing the long game. They always knew that there was a referendum built into the Good Friday Agreement. Unionism, I think, treated it initially like a settlement and thought that that was it. The clock stopped at that point, and it didn't. Okay. You know, it continued to move.
All right, Alison, we'll leave it there for now, but thank you for joining us on the programme. Alison Morris from the Irish News.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.